Hello, friends. Welcome to Storytime with Janet Keeler. I'm Janet, a former newspaper journalist and now a journalism professor at Eckerd College, but I just happen to be in love with children's books, especially when someone reads them to me. This podcast is for grandparents, parents, babysitters, caretakers, and kids of all ages who want to share the joy of reading children's books aloud. Today's guest is Linda Smock, who I met a few months ago at a children's book festival in Tampa. And that's where I got the first glimpse of the ways Linda has turned her love of nature and science into beautiful books. What child wouldn't want to get to know Betsy, the Brazilian bat? Welcome, Linda.
Thank you.
So how did a former Northeast High School family and consumer science teacher, well, I think we used to call that home ec, didn't we, back
correct.
In the day?
Yep. That's correct.
Teacher and also a principal of a private school, become a children's book author. Tell us about your journey to homespun stories.
Well, as you've mentioned, I started off as a high school teacher, and then I became a curriculum specialist supervisor, and then on into elementary school, where I served as a principal for a private school, and I really learned to love those little children. After I retired, I chose to become a master gardener. And in learning about all the different plants and the need for the different insects for pollination, just for balance in nature, it just brought up some old loves from my childhood where my father was a farmer. I always was working in the gardens and in the fields, helping my mother with her beautiful flowers, and just realizing the importance of nature. And therefore, I started writing.
Well, and you're kind of an unusual person in Florida in that you're a native Floridian.
Yes, I am a native Floridian.
Yeah, you grew up in the Panhandle?
Correct.
In Chipley?
Correct.
Is that Washington County,
I think?
So,
correct.
So lots of lots of gardening and things
yes.
like that. Mm-hmm. And then you found your way down to the Tampa Bay area.
Yes, I got my first teaching job and started here.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the Master Gardener certification. How did that kind of affect and influence your writing or your topics?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I was writing for The Dirt, which is the online magazine for the master gardeners. And during COVID, I was just writing articles for that as my volunteer time. And so those articles then became a part of the things that I started writing about for children also. I've also used them for blogs.
Nice. So, mm-hmm. so, but during COVID, though, so this is a, you know, this is a fairly new endeavor for you.
Yes,
so
it is.
So we're talking 2020 till
correct.
Now, so about 5 years. And how many books have you written?
I have written 5 devotional books and 5 children's books.
And you're busy.
Yes, it's fun.
You're busy. And, mm-hmm. and ideas, tons of ideas.
And tons of ideas for future books, yes.
Awesome. So mm-hmm. tell me what you think about the importance of teaching children. Well, first of all, the age range is what for your books, would you say?
They are from 5 years old to up to 10 years of age.
Okay, so 5 mm-hmm. to 10. And what's your idea of how science and nature education, why is that important for young kids?
It's very important for young kids because they are going to make the difference in whether or not many of our species even continue on Earth.
Oh, no pressure, children. Let's go.
Right. So their knowledge about the importance of many of our native species is important for us to maintain those species as our population grows.
Well, and we've talked about this earlier. Jane Goodall has just died.
Right.
And I know she was an important person to you.
Yes.
I was telling you too, my students at Eckerd
right.
were pretty distraught when they heard the news. So
right.
her influence goes mm-hmm. multi-generational.
Right.
Right.
And multi-continents.
Right. Yes. Right. All over the world. Very global.
Very.
And she was a gentle person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She
correct.
Wasn't, you know.
Right.
She was very mm-hmm. encouraging about you could do things.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of mm-hmm. what could you do locally and how do books like yours,
yeah.
you know, inspire people?
Right. A book such as the one that we're going to be reading a little bit from in a few minutes, Betsy the Brazilian Bat, helps us realize that bats are not really dangerous. They're not there to get us. It also teaches us what to do if one happens to be in our house or if it happens to be on the ground, and how we need to avoid it. But it makes sure that we understand that they are eating probably close to 1,000 mosquitoes and other insects per hour. And that's a lot of insects that that we don't want on our earth.
Right. So so there's this element of, you know, teaching kids they don't need to be scared about animals and critters they see. Of course, maybe some they should be, but...
Well, they need to have a healthy respect.
There you go. That's a nice way to put that, and I appreciate that. What's your reaction from children when you read the books to them?
Oh, most of them just thoroughly enjoy them, and they ask a lot of questions.
Well, this book that you're going to read today, Betsy the Brazilian Bat, is, dare I say, a little long.
Yes, it is.
Right? Longer than maybe book publishers suggest.
So correct.
Talk about that, why
talk
that is.
Talk about that. There are a couple of reasons for that. It does hold children's interest in many cases, especially gifted children. They usually love the books. If they're not emotionally ready for a chapter book yet, but they need all the information that would be in a chapter book, the books are just perfect. They are also written so they can be easily divided, so that parents or grandparents can break them up into sections. But children ask questions with them. And many times, like with Just Call Me Honey, my first one, children
which
want
is
to,
about, of course, honeybees, the honeybee.
Honeybees. Yeah. Children want to create a garden that will attract honeybees. And they will plan and become little activists on what to do. So it does give children that opportunity to become activists if that's a comfortable role for them. Yeah. And many like that.
Yeah, it would inspire them too.
Mm-hmm.
And
correct.
And bees, often people have a pretty healthy, you know, concern about getting stung. And for some people, I know that's not good. But it's not necessarily true for all people.
Correct.
And they still have a role to play.
They have a very important role to play, because we will not have enough fruits and vegetables to feed us all, or enough grain to feed the animals that we eat if we don't have honeybees and other native bees as well.
Do you have some tricks when you read to children that keeps their attention?
Most of the time I have a puppet with me or I wear a costume.
Oh.
Okay. So,
what kind of costume?
Well, for Betsy the Brazilian, no, I'm sorry, not Betsy the Brazilian Bat, for A Letter from White Peacock the Butterfly, I wear a butterfly costume.
Oh, wow. How
okay.
fun.
Okay. I do have a honeybee costume, and I have a gopher tortoise puppet for GT the gopher tortoise. So either a puppet or a costume is usually what I do.
So for parents who maybe aren't, you know, willing to put on a full costume at bedtime, do you have some, which though sounds like fun though, do you have some tips, like how can they help with the reading that, you know, their kids get the most out of it and they enjoy it too?
Oh, yes. All right. I think using those verbal expressions and creating almost like you're acting like the creature and you're reading as if you're the creature in this case is really important there. And then they can also stop and ask questions, and they can help the child relate to the pictures. You can stop and look at the pictures. And in some of my books, photographs as well as pictures. I often have both mixed together throughout the books.
Oh, photographs and the artwork.
Right.
Right. Do you think, you know, when you said that about stopping to let them answer questions, I wonder sometimes, and, you know, being like a, you know, having a child way long time ago that I used to read to, I think I was like kind of a little bit too into myself about how I was going to read it and the voices I was going to do, that I'm not sure I stopped enough to say, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's very important to stop.
Right.
And ask them what they think. Help them develop those skills of thinking through things and seeing how the picture relates to the context of the book can be very important also.
Yeah, I think that that's something that maybe we don't do. We know it's important to read to our children, but that it's the give and take. It's not just the one way.
Correct.
Kind of the one way street to, you know, to the reading and everything.
Absolutely.
So your books are self-published.
Yes.
Talk about why you did that.
Well, it was during COVID that I started writing.
And you've come a long way in 5 years.
I had written textbooks previously, so I knew some about that. But during that time of COVID, and I was pretty isolated because I was going through chemotherapy, as you know, and I was not getting out and doing things in public. And the easiest thing to do was to start with self-publishing because I could just go through Amazon and KDP and do it. So that's really how it started. But then as it went further, as I continued with it, I realized that in a lot of ways, you do far better with self-publishing than you do with a publishing company because those publishing companies often want you to do your own marketing and do a lot of the work that publishing companies used to do.
So you're doing it anyway.
You're doing it anyway.
Whether you've got a publisher
so
or you're
on your
own.
So you might as well make more money out of it.
Yeah, that's unless you're like a New York Times bestseller. You're doing a lot of stuff yourself anyway.
You are.
Plus, you can kind of... Well, you call the shots, right? So
you can
hire your artist. You can decide how many book signings you're going to do, the whole thing.
Yes.
And plus get them out there quicker.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
I would think that you wanted to do that.
Yes, you absolutely. And you can make decisions. Like with two of my books, I made the decision that I didn't just want art, that I wanted photographs. And I might not have had that option because the publisher makes those decisions. I had that power. And the book is so much more educational because it has both.
Well, right. And I'm not sure I'm not sure they would let you go 500 words or whatever on these.
Correct.
Is that the average? 500?
500 to 1,000 is the average.
Is what they want.
Is what they want.
So yeah. You know, if you went to 2,000, you're not going to be able to do that.
No, you're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah. They've got their formula and you got to stick with it.
That's right.
So I know you've brought Betsy the Brazilian Bat to read to us today. So let's hear some of the story.
Okay. Betsy the Brazilian Bat. I like to play hide and seek. Do you? Then let's play. I will hide on some of the pages in this book. You will seek me. 1, 2, 3. Ready or not, here I go. While you try to find me, I will tell you a little about myself. My name is Betsy. I am a Brazilian free-tailed bat. That means my tail projects out behind me. I live in the United States, but my siblings and cousins live in all parts of North America, Central America, and South America. Some also live in the Caribbean islands. We are considered a keystone species. Oh, what is a keystone species? They are plants and animals that play a critical role in the balance of nature. If a keystone species is not present, the plants and animals in the area will be harmed. I hide in the daytime so I can sleep. I like man-made structures, including bridges, attics, and bat houses. Those Spanish tiles used on top of buildings in the South make good hiding places for me. I also like to sleep in the boots of palm trees. My cousins, the Mexican free-tailed bats, sleep in caves. I prefer to stay above ground. We Brazilian bats share the structure we live in with other types of bats. We are one big, happy family, so it does not matter what color we are or if our ears are shaped differently. We embrace one another. My wingspan is about 12 inches. That makes me a medium-sized bat. I can fold my wings up and look like I am no bigger than a credit card. I am a mammal. My fur is deep brown or gray brown. I have a long tail and wrinkled cheeks. Some people think I'm ugly. My mom thinks I'm cute. I believe her. I am very sociable. I like to be with my family and friends. We often roost together. That means we sleep in the same place. I like to eat insects, especially the ones people think are pests. I like mosquitoes, wasps, and night flying moths. I eat beetles and bugs that nibble on farmers' crops. I catch and eat about 500 bugs an hour. Some of my relatives eat about 1,000 an hour. I am a friend to farmers. Do you want to learn a big word? Here it is, insectivorous. That means a creature which eats only insects. I can use it in a sentence for you. Many types of bats are insectivorous. You might win a trivia contest or a spelling bee with that bit of knowledge. Oh, we were playing hide and seek. Did you find me on the first page? Were there other pages where I was hard to spot? Do you want to be found? I do not want to be found. If anything finds me, my sleep is disturbed. I am a fast flyer. I fly about 25 miles an hour, but have been clocked faster. I fly high, up to 9,000 feet in the air. That is a lot higher than skyscrapers. I can catch the airways that go over high places, like mountains, and ride up, up, up. It is fun, but it's cold up there, and I cannot find many insects, so I do not stay long. In summer, we bats choose a place where we can have our babies and they can be safe. In winter, we usually move to a different location. That way, predators are less likely to find us. If it's a super safe place, we stay there year-round. Oh, did I mention that I smell? Oh, I do not mean that I sniff things out. I mean you can smell me. When I'm in a large group of bats, you get a whiff of us from a few blocks away. It smells musty. I like it. You may not. It comes because our urine and guano, that's poop, collect beneath where we roost. There are insects in it that help it to decompose and create gas. You smell the gas that escapes. Did you know that people, especially farmers, use my guano for fertilizer? It can be added to the soil or to the compost. It can be steeped in water to make liquid fertilizer. It is rich in nutrients and is also used as a natural fungicide. That means fungi will not grow in it. Some people are afraid of bats. I understand. Because if there's a bat with rabies, I'm afraid too. Very few bats get rabies, but if one does, you and I both need to avoid them. You need to avoid touching all bats, even as healthy ones, so we don't accidentally get hurt. If you see a bat flying in the daytime, it might have rabies. If it is not afraid of you, it might have rabies. If it's on the ground, it might have rabies. And then we go into a section on what is rabies and how to be careful and avoid it.
Thank you, Linda. That was beautiful. You have such a beautiful reading voice. I just thought of so many ways for a teacher or a parent to like stop and talk about things. And my gosh, what kid isn't going to want to read something that has the word poop in it? That's fun. That's always fun.
Yes.
But I mean, just so much just in that part of it, you learn about this species that you may not know in any other way. So that's fantastic. So, well, thank you for joining me today on Storytime. So you can find out more about Linda's books at her website, which is author Linda Smock, smock.com. And you can meet Linda at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 18th at the Clearwater Barnes & Noble. She'll be signing books and reading there. I think you're going to be reading from your latest love story to science, right? A letter from White Peacock, the butterfly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ooh, that's going to be good. Mm-hmm. You can also find her books at the Story Garden, which is a beautiful children's bookstore in St. Petersburg, on the Walmart website, Amazon and Barnes & Noble website, too. Mm-hmm. So thank you again, Linda.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for listening. Until next time.